Marcus, another week of news, another week of the internet, another week of one newsman and a web guy.
Yes, another episode where we try to drill down on some of those issues that have made the news, but perhaps people haven't really gone into the depth of what's behind the story.
Yeah, or even a part of the story that you may not have thought of, like the Trump meets Putin story. Big news this week.
Yeah, this is all about, obviously, a very big issue, these two guys getting together. But we've had a look at, you know, the body language and just the way that Donald Trump went about it.
Yeah, the body language, and not just between Trump and Putin, but between Trump and Melania.
Mm. And it reminded me of a famous Aussie handshake as well.
Yeah, and also I have to apologise in advance for some accents that I attempted while doing this and which I'll never do ever again.
No, they were brilliant.
We also are going to look at the worst celebrities in the world.
Yeah, this is all, I guess, up in the air of what it actually means to be a bad celebrity. It's one person's judgment of them, and we're possibly being a bit more lenient than the critic in hand.
Yeah, I think we had a couple of personal anecdotes to relay as well. And this interesting thing that happened during the week, I really only discovered it as we were talking about it, but I have found myself being a big fan of Thomas Markle, father of Meghan, former Hollywood star, now royal. Something's come to light this week. He might have been stretching the truth is one way to put it, or just blatantly lying would be another way to say it.
But like him, loathe him, he's kept the headlines ticking along, hasn't he?
I'm still not sure if I don't love this guy for some reason. anyway, let's talk about him. Anything else you want to add?
No, I reckon that's a jam-packed podcast, and I look forward to kicking it off.
All right, here it is. Huge geopolitical story this week, newsman, which I will quickly point out, we, or at least me.
Out of our depth, getting into the real nitty-gritty of it.
Out of our depth is what I was trying to say. Have no right discussing this. We really, you know, much smarter people than us are analysing the meeting of Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin.
Yes. We all know it's important because these two guys are heavyweights in international circles.
Yep.
And both very strong personalities. So, I'll be the first to admit I don't really get the nuts and bolts of what they're getting at, but
the posturing, the manoeuvring, the political scheming. We'll leave all that to other people.
Yeah.
What I want to look at.
Other
forums. What we should look at today is what the body language experts said about the meeting, because this is what I like, because we can all relate to body language.
Yeah.
We're all communicating with our body language and reading other people's body language all the time. Interesting to see how it works in these high-pressure, high-stakes moments.
And Donald isn't one to... There's nothing subtle about anything about Donald Trump.
No.
So his body language is always on show and always, even for the amateur, you can see some really telltale signs about what he's actually saying, what he's doing.
Yeah. So just to put the meeting in context, the general consensus was that Putin was the powerful man, Trump was cowering in the corner. Some even said that the way Trump behaved in deferring to Putin was treasonous. One of the most amusing quotes came from Arnold Schwarzenegger, of all people. He said that Donald Trump, quote, stood there like a little wet noodle. So when he said it, like a little wet noodle.
I'm glad you tried.
A little wet noodle. And then he says, like a little fanboy. He said that he was waiting for Trump to ask for an autograph or something at some point. So he really, you know, whacked Donald Trump over this. was nowhere near strong enough, he thought. The body language expert that I've seen quoted tended to agree. He sort of said that Trump was doing, here's the technical word for it, neuro-linguistic programming technique.
Oh, yes.
We know that as just mirroring, copying someone else's behavior. You know, you mirror their body language and it subconsciously creates this bond between the two of you.
Oh, so it's deliberately?
Yes, this is where it gets interesting. What this Dr. Louise Marler is suggesting, and I'll go through some of her quotes in a minute, but it's almost like taking what she said, it starts to look like maybe it was intentional by Trump to look like the weaker of the two, that he kind of wanted Putin to walk away feeling like he was the big dog. Dr. Louise says, I noticed Trump wasn't puffing himself up as he did with the Queen and Kim Jong-un. So he wasn't trying to, you know, literally make himself look bigger. he wasn't overtly trying to overpower him. He was still quite strong and powerful, but he didn't go over the top. It was bizarre. My theory is he knew exactly what he was doing. Trump doesn't do anything by accident. He was obviously intentionally pandering to Russia, and it's obvious this is part of a plan. The question is what that plan is. Interesting, because I can imagine that this press conference scenario is pure theatre, and whatever either of them do in that moment in front of the cameras could be sending a message or, you know, portraying an image that is a world away from what's going on behind the scenes.
I think that's fascinating, and I do think he has that calculating sort of mind, but I also think he's got a massive, massive ego that wouldn't allow him to come across in this way.
That's a good point.
Although, it's uncharacteristic for him to be not a shrinking violet, but taking a back seat. So perhaps, yes.
Dr. Louise talks about this. We've just spoken about how Trump was sort of deferring to Putin. And you've said, well, how could Trump's ego allow that? And it did, but only to a point. Apparently, when they walked off, Putin put his arm around Trump. She says, that's a power trip to get your arm on last. Trump then put his arm around Putin and Putin put his arm on again. So Trump was only willing to go so far with this. And there was a bit of, you know, horseplay at the end there. They were both determined to win that last one, she said. So maybe you're right. He was happy to go with it for a while, but only to a point.
Let's hope it's for the good of America and the world. You'd hope that's what he's trying to do.
Yep.
He came out, he thought talks had been more productive, or relationships between the two nations were more cordial than they'd been for several years. So perhaps a mini victory for Donald Trump.
One thing you got to say for him, he has a lot of meetings.
He's
doing a lot of high-profile summits. I mean, we spoke about Kim Jong-un the other day, the Queen, now Putin.
Angela Merkel.
Yeah. Was that a Schwarzenegger accent? One final thing, because there was some body language byplay between Trump and Melania, First Lady.
Wow. Well, we've seen a lot of that in the journey.
Oh.
And let's just say, frosty.
Issues. Big issues there. She refuses to hold his hand at any point. Anyway, Putin pulled out a soccer ball in this press conference, threw it to Trump and said, oh, my comrade, the ball is in your court.
Ah, that's good.
And so Trump took the soccer ball, juggled it, you know, tossed it around for a little bit. Said it was going to be a gift for his son, and then threw the ball at Melania. Now, the body language expert, Dr. Louise, said when Trump threw it to Melania, he just tossed it off like she was a piece of scum. If I was her, I would have thrown it back at him. It's fascinating how he treats her. Normally, if you'd pass the ball to your wife, you'd be like, are you ready? Catch it, kind of thing. But no, he just chucks it to her. It was weird, she says.
Yeah.
So, maybe in the context of a worldwide press conference, the throwing of the ball to your wife, you're not. Maybe it is a little more offhand than usual, perhaps, because there are other things on your mind, maybe. But I don't know. Maybe he should have kicked the ball at Putin, I reckon.
Go for America! Yeah. Hey, you know my favorite piece of body language in politics, and it pales in comparison to this event.
Yeah.
But it was Mark Latham and John Howard.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it was on the election day, on the eve of the election day.
Yeah.
Crossing paths outside a radio studio.
Yeah.
And the handshake by Mark Latham pretty much ended his tilt at being Prime Minister.
Yeah. Is that because, do you think that was because it tipped everyone off that he was a psychopath?
I think
so. Is that what it was? Well, like,
my memory of it initially, and it was a simplified one, was that he was just a big brutish bully because he sort of towered over Johnny and really grabbed his arm and kept the handshake going. And
And he was like ragdolling John Howard just about. Like, he was shaking so vigorously.
So he's always obviously read like Alan Peace's body language or whatever the day before. But it just shows how powerful things are that are not spoken, but just implied what you do with your body. And it can be deliberate, but the trick of it is to make it seem natural.
Yeah, it's got to be subtle, doesn't it? That was Latham's error. Check this out, newsman. Forgot your name. What your name was for a second. how about this? A radio host has named and shamed the worst celebs.
Well, radio hosts are known for being hard-hitting and leaving nothing on the table. So who is it and who have they sort of ousted?
Yes. Nick Grimshaw is his name. He is a BBC Radio 1 host.
Okay.
And I like this. He's been doing breakfast radio 6 years, apparently in the UK, famous for attracting you know, the cream of the celebrity crop.
Mm.
A who's who of the celebrity world have all been appearing on his show, apparently. And he is quitting. So this is what you'd call a parting shot.
Yes.
Or many parting shots on his way out.
Walking across the bridge.
Yeah.
Torching it.
Torching the bridge.
Burning the bridge. Saying, this is it.
Taking no prisoners.
Yes.
And other cliches. I do like that, though. He's sat tight for 6 years. He's been doing this job. And now he can't hold in any longer.
Mm.
He's named and shamed them. You know, those celebrities that when you meet in real life, he found them to be, you know, very different to their public persona.
People love this. People love these sort of stories because we all just look up to celebrities and we admire them, but we almost enjoy as much finding out they're just big phonies or annoying or real unpleasant people.
Yeah, and a lot of these stories come out like, oh, you know, a Sunrise producer talks about the worst guests they ever had. Click on it and he talks about the worst guests they ever had, but he doesn't name who it was. This guy's delivered the goods. Having said that, there's really only three celebrities he's outed here. Angelina Jolie.
Oh.
Number one.
Yep.
Doesn't really get much bigger than her.
Yeah.
Cold, quote unquote, he said.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That doesn't sound, you know, too bad.
Yeah.
She was cold. Okay. Well, you know, it could be worse.
Yeah. And maybe she just didn't hit it off with you.
Yeah.
Nick, if that is your name.
Grimsby. I mean, Grimshaw.
I've heard, you know, you hear she's a bit offbeat. But as you said, not too surprising that a celebrity might be a bit cool.
One radio host cold might be another radio host's, you know, quirkily eccentric.
Mm.
You
know? And you don't know the background to whether, you know, she'd done 10 interviews that day.
Yep.
And actually had a cold.
Yeah, maybe she did literally had a cold. So I'll take that one with a pinch of salt because, you know, we all have bad days as well. You don't know if the celeb might have had a bad day. That
Does he say he's interviewed her many times and she was cold each time?
Or? Yeah, I don't know. Mm. Anyway, this was a good one. He said he was pleasantly surprised by reality TV star Kim Kardashian.
Right.
He said she wasn't trying to be nice. She was just a sweet, pretty girl, a bit airheady. Okay, so now this starts to sound like an insult. And taking pictures of herself, which is what she's selling, and then he brings it back in her favour. It isn't an act. So what you see is what you get, yeah. I guess is what he's saying with her.
See, I would have thought she would be a bit cool to your average person she doesn't know.
Yeah.
But this is a person that would be promoting her image.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's good.
Good one, Kim. Maybe I'll start following her on Instagram.
Yeah.
Not that she needs my follow. Okay, the celebrity that he saved his biggest whack for, he has really launched it at Will Smith.
Oh, no. I love Will Smith.
Do you really?
I think he always comes across as all fun and happy.
Hang on, you're thinking of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Will Smith, aren't you?
But even, didn't he do some promotional stuff in...
We talked about Will Smith on this podcast when he was doing his extravaganza tour of Australia, and I think at the time we did say he seemed a bit odd, a bit intense maybe.
Yeah. Anyway, I've seen him on shows and thought he was endearing.
Well, this is why you need to hear what Nick's got to say this is what Nick said: the celebrities are all nice to him, but what he judges them on is how they treat the producers. Uh-huh. So, you know, it's the sort of behind the scenes. They'll always be nice to the host, but how do they just treat, you know, everyone else behind the scenes? He said Will Smith was fake and patronizing. I'll tell you what he said about him, and you can make up your mind whether this actually sounds like Will Smith was out of line or whether he was just actually maybe a really nice guy. Here is what he says about Will. He was high-fiving the receptionist and saying, "You're the best receptionist ever." High-fiving the phone person and saying, "You'd better answer those phones," which I thought was a tad patronizing. Coming into an office and saying, "Wow, you answer phones," seemed a bit self-aware, like, "I'm really famous and you're really excited that I've acknowledged you." I get where he's coming from, but is that a rule? Is that a top-order crime?
Nah, I'm still in Will's camp. He's just... fanning out the persona about who he is. So he's he's been criticised for being a bit over the top. Okay, but do you want him to come in all serious and like, please continue on? Like, I can guarantee you that receptionist has that story in the holster and brings it out at every dinner party.
Yeah.
Did I tell you the time that Will Smith said, "Keep on answering those phones, you're the best"?
Yeah. And if Will Smith hadn't been like that, then Nick Grimshaw would have been saying, "Oh, you know, I met Will Smith. He was cold. He's cold."
Yeah. So I would rather a celeb be showy and a little bit, what would you call, a thin veneer of showmanship outside than cold.
Yeah.
That would be my preference.
Yeah. Have you ever had a celebrity run-in that you care to some naming and shaming?
Not really. But I remember Carrie Fisher came into the 5AA studios. I wasn't here at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I contemplated coming into work early. But apparently she was quite...
Oh, hang on.
Quite matter of fact. So Carrie Fisher, obviously Princess Leia from the Star Wars movies.
I thought you were talking about Carrie Bickmore. Okay, my mistake.
Did I say Bickmore?
I don't know. I don't think you did. No. I just thought... I heard Carrie and I just thought
Bickmore. Right, no, Carrie Fisher, the... Princess Leia.
Yeah, megastar.
Yes.
Absolute megastar. Okay, she has passed away, so.
Yeah, but she was just a bit cold and a bit demanding. She wanted sort of a can of Diet Coke with, I don't know, but it didn't sound like it was fun times in the halls after the interview, which is what I was feeling like I was missing out on, but obviously she's all business.
Yeah, see, the thing with the celebrity, I mean, we all do our job and then, you know, when you're going down the vending machine, like how many of us are actually in a good mood? But a celebrity is a performer, and even when they are, you know, when the camera is off, if there's anyone around, they're still kind of under the spotlight.
Yeah.
So, you know, that must just be tiring. And what she asked for a can of Coke, I don't think
No, think that's... but it was just very, yeah, it was nothing really. But you're right, it's all about performance. And I guess you get to a stage in your celebrity life where you're not fussed about your individuals that don't like you. So at the start, you want to sort of...
Yeah.
You want to make a good impression. You're pumping up your film. It hinges on word of mouth. It's great. You don't want to have negative publicity. But you get to the point where you're someone like Carrie Fisher, who's would be known all around the world. She's probably not fussed if one producer gets their nose out of joint.
Yeah. I just thought of this now. It's not really a celebrity, but Jonathan Brown is a former Brisbane Lions captain, three-time premiership player. And a long, long, long time ago, he was at the peak of his career. And me and some friends were at a football game. Must have been an SANFL game, I think. And we're just kicking the footy out the front of the oval, and he must have been in town to play a game and must have been catching a bit of the game. Anyway, we just kicked a kick, and then all of a sudden he joined us and was playing kick to kick, like a marks up kind of thing. And, you know, it was just a bit of fun. And then afterwards we were all like, oh, wow, man, we just kicked the footy with Jonathan Brown. And, like, he was, you know, one of the best players in the competition at the time. And it left an impression on us. We just felt like, wow, that's cool that he would have done that. But I wonder now a bit potentially, like, really, he probably shouldn't have. Like, what if he twisted an ankle or something? Anyway, it says, you know, I don't know what that says about him, but there's no big deal. Just, you know, just like he's just one of the punters having a bit of a dob.
That is a fantastic story. I wish it was my own. It just shows that one little moment, one second dedicated to goodwill can last a lifetime.
You should put that on the front of a some kind of Hallmark greeting card or something. Marcus, hesitate to bring this one up because the royal wedding has been and gone. We talked about it at the time.
It was big.
Huge. Do we need to revisit it? I mean, I kind of felt like we had put the Markle in-laws behind us. I thought, you know, in the lead up to that wedding, they were making a racket. Meghan Markle's family and some step-siblings, and they were making a lot of noise, talking a lot of trash. Kind of felt like once the wedding was done, they would probably fade off into the sunset.
Which
is
the case.
Well, which is why I hesitate. We're bringing them back. There's been a twist this week.
Tim, I think there's a certain degree of voyeurism that we enjoy, knowing that Prince Harry has married someone whose family is not very royal in comparison. In fact, almost bordering on feral, really.
That's your word, not mine. Yes, that is true. But also, again, this twist, this is the only reason I want to talk about it, because who doesn't love a twist?
That's what I'm getting at.
We thought the story was over. But is it? Because we remember before the wedding, what's his name? Thomas Markle, Meghan's dad. Oh, he was more in the headlines than Meghan was.
Never has a father-in-law been so prominent. Like, normally, of all the people, all the players in a wedding, especially a big one, father-in-law, back of the line. But he was forefront.
Front and centre. Mixed up with the paparazzi. Yeah. Turned out he was staging photos. So that was one whole thing. And then all at the same time, he had a heart attack. Mm. Heavens above, he's had a heart attack. And that was really why, that was given as the reason why he didn't turn up or didn't attend the wedding. Now we are told that he just pretended to have a heart attack. He, in fact, did not have a heart attack. He made that up so he could get out of attending the wedding.
Now, I don't want to leap to the defense of Tom. Where is your source? Where are you getting this from? Is it a reputable source?
Well, the source is unnamed. and the source has told this to the Daily Mail. So, you know, make of that what you will. But this is an interesting point. This source says that the Mexican hospital, Thomas lives in Mexico, the Mexican hospital where Thomas said he was having his heart surgery, have no record of him ever being in the hospital for a heart operation at that time.
Okay.
So, unnamed source and potentially sketchy tabloid newspaper aside, that has got to be verified. It crossed my mind, should I ring the Mexican hospital and try to get to the bottom of this before we talk about it? Because, I mean, it must be an easy thing to double check. He's either there or he wasn't.
Yeah, yeah.
That they have run with this suggests to me, well, they've also checked up and must have discovered that he was not there. So I think I went on record as saying I was in Thomas Markle's corner. I felt like when the pictures of him came out of him studying, Britain, reading books about Britain in the lead up to the wedding.
With the book slightly open for...
yeah.
Photographers to see.
He won me over. And then I found out he had staged that. And I still felt like, no, that's not a big crime, I didn't think.
No, there was a feeling like they've probably got other pictures of him. So why not give a positive light of yourself?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't do that?
He's just playing the game kind of to his advantage, to everyone's advantage, really, at that point. But now this, if he's lied about having a heart attack, I still... For some reason, I'm sticking by Thomas. I'm only noticing this now, but I'm loath to turn on him because I just feel like you cannot underestimate what an absolute mind-bending head screw it would be to have a child of yours marry into the British royal family. I probably would want to skip out, potentially want to skip out on that too, because, that is scrutiny that most humans would never have to deal with.
But what an excuse. Isn't there any other, if he didn't have heart surgery, isn't there something else that he could have come up with? Like
nervous breakdown?
mental health issues
are
a very serious issue.
Yeah.
But, no one will question, no one can sort of really scrutinize the depth of that without a psychologist spilling the beans. So
I am torn because in one sense I feel like, just man up, go to the wedding. Like, who cares? It's not about you anyway. But then at the same time I'm thinking like, what are you going to do, make small talk with Oprah? Like, well, how does that work? Oh, hey, Oprah, saw your show.
But like anyone, of all weddings, it's a very long celebration with the reception. It's long.
Yep.
It's a long thing.
Yeah.
But we've all been to events that we didn't want to be at, and you just go, well, it's not forever. It's just short, small talk for a little while. And these people, you're not going to end up next to... boring. Well, these people are going to have very interesting lives compared to your own. So you should have gone, well, I'm going in there and I'm going to meet the
Beckham,
Duchess of some backwater,
yeah,
and have a little talk about her royal connection.
He's a good storyteller. We know this. So he could have gone there, even if he didn't have anecdotes to share with these super celebs. We now realize he could have just made ones up. He could have had everyone on tenterhooks with his storytelling.
Yeah.
But now he's saying he's been frozen out. Meghan and Harry aren't even talking to him. So if that's true, that makes me wonder, there might still be a bit more going on here.
And I believe her sister-in-law, the troublemaking sister-in-law, had basically said, if Dad passes away soon, it's on your head, Meghan. How rough is that?
Yeah, you don't say that, do you?
No.
You don't put that on someone.
Hey, I can't stop thinking about the conversations you would have at a wedding reception of the royals. And I can imagine that for a normal person, sharing your normal life with the royals, you'd be feeling, not ashamed, but you'd feel like it's mundane. But perhaps they would see it like, it's like if we found an undiscovered African village that hadn't had contact with the modern world.
Yeah.
It's a simple life, but we're intrigued.
Yeah.
And that would be the royals with Thomas.
I guess. they've met normal people before, probably, haven't they? But
I'm not. Yeah, but
what are you going to?
He's not even normal. He's extraordinary in a weird way.
What are you even going to talk to him about, though? Like, yeah, bought a new pair of jeans.
Yep, yep. I took the recycling bin out. It wasn't recycling week.
And they're like, what is this recycling bin you speak of?
Yes.
How does this work?
And I thought the refuse just left the table and it was all gone.
So you're telling me the servants take a recycling bin? Well, we don't even have servants. And at that point, their jaws would just be on the floor.
Mm. Anyway, I reckon we need to push out the phone bill of the company we work for and call this Mexican hospital.
Yeah, we'll get to the bottom of it. We'll report back.